Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Robots Radio presents...
You're listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast, the best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons & Dragons.
Hello and welcome to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. My name is Sergio.
And I am Mary.
And we have a very special episode this week. You know, we are your one-stop shop for D&D lore.
It's true.
Right? A sort of D&D lore shop till you drop type situation, right?
Yeah. Got,
you know, dozens upon dozens of episodes of lore. You can dive right in and start learning everything there is to learn behind the creatures and histories and characters of Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. But whenever there is a new book from Wizards of the Coast, from an official D&D book, we can't help ourselves. We want to read it. We want to devour it. We want to digest it. Mm-hmm. And we want to tell you all about it. So that's exactly what we're doing this week.
Yes.
So what are we covering, Mary?
We have that beautiful early access to Keys from the Golden Vault.
Right. This book, as of the time of this recording, and maybe by the time you're listening to it, the book does not come out for several days. The book does not come out until the official release date is February 21st. But D&D Beyond does this awesome thing where you can pre-order the physical and digital copy. One, that's super dope. Love having access to both of those.
It makes me so happy.
And two, you get early access to the digital version up to 2 weeks, which means that we can actually cover it ahead of time. And we're gonna keep it spoiler free. We're going to briefly touch over the adventures, a couple of them each, in the second half of the show that kind of that tickle our particular fancy.
Give a little bit of flavor to it and see so you can kind of get a little idea of what sort of things you can find in there.
Yeah, but like I said, no, we're not going to spoil any adventures for you. We're not going to tell you that the boat sinks at the end, and you know, fortunately. But we
told him about the boat. You weren't supposed to mention the boat.
The boat adventure, the boat heist. It's like you steal the heart of the ocean, but the boat sinks, and so you all die. Roll new characters. And but in the first half of the show, we're going to go through kind of what the book is about, what you can expect from the book. It's very cool. Let's just dive right into it. Let's just get right into the nitty gritty of it all.
Yeah.
So Keys from the Golden Vault, it bills itself as a collection of heists. Mm-hmm. So think like the Ocean's movie, Ocean's 11, 12, 13, or the Italian Job, or even the Fast and Furious series. I mean, some of those are straight up heist movies, like the one where they steal the vault in Brazil, I believe, which is like one of the, like, I remember watching the first few Fast and Furious movies and thinking like, okay, like whatever, like these are dumb fun. But that one, I was like, this is legitimately freaking awesome.
This is so ridiculous. And now they're over the top and cheesy.
And now they're flying like Hondas in space or something like that. I don't know.
Hondas in space.
So think like Ocean's 11, Italian Job. Like, hell, you could even think of the Great Muppet Caper.
That's what I would think of, but that's because my brain's full of Muppets.
Yeah, you are a human Muppet.
I might be a human Muppet. That's fair.
You're like if the Muppets made a Pinocchio like version, and you became a real person.
That's also reasonable. This is also reasonable. Muppet is actually my dog's nickname because he looks like a Jim Henson puppet.
That's adorable.
Like 100%.
Well, then you're gonna have to post pictures in the Robot Radio's network Discord.
Of course.
So
we'll share pictures of them.
standard adventure build applies, meaning that the adventures are designed, meant to be played by, you know, 4 to 6 players. So if you have less than that or you have more than that, then you might want to scale it up or down appropriately. So in each adventure, and there are 13 of them in total, players will receive the mission and then plan the heist and then execute their plan and finally and hopefully escape with, you know, with the booty or, you know, unfortunately,
or their booties.
With at least with their booties, hopefully. with the booty, but at the very least their own booties. But yeah, I love how in each adventure there are different endings as far as like if you are able to, you know, collect whatever it was you're trying to procure, or if you failed, or if you kind of succeeded and kind of failed. It's pretty cool. But yeah, in most cases, like I said, this the mission involves procuring some kind of object. So there is the mission briefing. That's where they're recruited to undertake this specific job. And then there's the heist planning. The characters investigate the location. They learn about what obstacles they may need to overcome. And then they strategize about how to complete the job. And so each adventure includes a way for the characters to either create their own map or at least obtain a map of the location.
Right.
And this is really cool because each adventure has two different maps. There is the standard DM map, like what, you know, you normally think of as a D&D map. Mm-hmm. And then there is an in-universe map that someone has either created, you know, maybe perhaps it was the person that's hiring them for the job, or it's, you know, the map that the players create themselves. And so think like almost like a treasure map, you know.
The aesthetic is great.
Oh yeah, like I mean, like looks wise, and also, you know, it's not going to be to scale. It's not going to be 100% accurate. Mm-hmm. You know, they're gonna be like, there should be a tree there. Like, well, there's no freaking tree here. I don't know what to tell you. So it's a very like fun tech, very fun mechanic that they've included.
I like it.
And then, you know, the next part is to execute the heist, you know, enacting their plan. And then, you know, I said that they were going to be they had to learn about the obstacles that they need to overcome. But of course, unforeseen complications will often arise, which is always fun. And then finally, concluding the heist, which, like I said, the success is determined, will determine the reward and how the story might progress beyond that if you include it, if it's part of like a bigger adventure or campaign.
Right.
And so much like previous anthologies, like such as Journeys Through the Radiant Citadel, each adventure can be played as a one shot, or it can be incorporated into an already running campaign, or it can form a full campaign all to themselves. Just like play them back to back to back and blammo, you've got a campaign.
I love it.
Okay, so you gotta, you know, when you are planning a heist, when you want to execute a heist, you gotta have a crew, right?
You gotta have a crew.
Gotta have a crew. So because of the nature of these types of adventures, you know, certain abilities like dexterity, like charisma, and certain skill sets like stealth and persuasion, obviously, they're gonna be more desirable than usual.
Right.
So only having characters focused on those talents would make a whole lot of sense. Like have a whole bunch of like sneaky buggers running around.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And that would work great if you are just doing like a one shot, like, hey, let's just like play one of these one night. Let's create some characters really quickly and start to roll in. Or if you're going to do this as a full campaign, you know, start off like, all right, this is what we want to do. Let's you know, create these characters and play them out. But, you know, if you are playing these, if you're incorporating these into an already existing campaign, you know, your brute barbarian isn't all of a sudden going to become overnight, like as stealthy as your halfling rogue, you know? So combat prowess is less important when sneaking through a guarded complex. Whereas like stealth skills with lockpicking, social skills, clever problem solving, all that other stuff, you know, kind of comes to the forefront.
Right.
So if you are, like, you know, like I said, like kind of shoehorning this in to an already existing campaign, it's definitely going to require the characters to practice some teamwork. And yes. Additionally, you know, I recommend going the Ocean's 11 route when making a plan. If your character builds aren't exactly conducive to the heist genre.
Right.
Now, for those of you who have not seen the movies, it's a trilogy of heist movies. The main character is Danny Ocean. And especially in the first one, that I'll just go ahead and reference the first one. In Ocean's 11, main character is Danny Ocean. He builds a team. He recruits an entire team, like the 11, to rob a casino.
Love it.
And you might think, like, okay, well, they need a whole bunch of sneaky guys. But what's fun is that each member of the team has their own role to play, and they often don't overlap. Like, there is a Chinese gymnast character whose job it is to sneak into the casino vault, like, you know, flipping around and bending over all the, like, security lasers.
Right.
And then there's this demolitions expert whose job it is to blow the power grid and cause a temporary blackout. So, you know, and those, and they're on the same team, but those are very obviously different skill sets that they have.
Right.
So that, you know, that's to say, just because you have a team of PCs, and only one or two may seem best suited to take part of a heist, you know, that doesn't mean that your tanky characters or your spellcasters can't also take part.
Right. They just have a different role. It's not the role of the lockpicker.
Right. It's all about forming a plan that can and will involve each player and play to their strengths. And of course, you know, allowing players, if you're the DM, allowing players to purchase certain items can further tip the scales in their direction if need be. You know, you don't want to, you know, you don't want to make it too easy. You know, that's been a gripe as to, you know, the fifth edition is too player friendly. But you also don't want to make it so frustratingly hard that
nobody's having fun and it's miserable, because nobody wants to go into it with a character that they thought they were going to get to use for a certain situation and it not work out in a way that meets everybody's needs at the table.
No, exactly. And so, you know, and that is a lot of that has to come from the players as well as to like what their plan is.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a brute barbarian, you know, obviously, you know, he can't just go in swinging a great sword, trying to rob this, you know, crystal jewel from
from a very delicate situation.
Right. But maybe he can, you know, cause a fracas outside, a distraction, you know, start, you know, bump into somebody outside the guildmaster's hall and cause the city guard to have their attention placed on them rather than where it's supposed to be.
Where the himbo gets to pretend to be a himbo.
Yes.
Distract him with a bunch of stupid questions.
And so well-outfitted characters are going to be more likely to succeed at these adventures. So, you know, stuff like thieves tools, rope, a grappling hook, it might mean the difference between, you know, getting a shortcut or getting caught.
The other side of that is that you could also, things like that that aren't thought of beforehand, like that your players don't think of. Also, you can sprinkle that stuff into any of these vault type situations as well. Any kind of heist situation, people had been going to do it before, you could come across stuff, or there's a thousand ways to plug that in.
No, yeah. I mean, just talk to, you know, one of the drunks at the local tavern. It's like, man, that place must be impossible to break into. Like, well, I mean, like, if you had a grappling hook and, you know, detect magic spell, I mean, you probably avoid most of the traps, stuff like that, you know?
So thought you were about to make a Tenacious D in the Pick of Destiny reference.
I actually have not seen that movie. I love Tenacious D, but I have not seen the movie. Is that weird? I've seen Tenacious
this
D.
This is really weird
concert,
to be on this side on of this side, conversation. Yeah. It's weird for me to be on the side of the conversation of like, yeah, I've watched this movie a bunch of times. It's the perfect reference. And you're like, I got no clue, my guy.
I don't get it.
I don't
understand what you're talking
about. Well, that's your homework now. So there you go.
All right. I have homework now.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
You poor thing.
I have to watch a supposedly hilarious movie.
It's great.
Like starring actors who I already love.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be terrible.
So like I said, there are 13 adventures in the book. So let's just run down them really quickly. So at level one, you have the Merkmeyer Malevolence, and you're supposed to retrieve a mysterious egg ensconced in a museum to avert disaster. Sounds spine tingly dingly. At level two, you have the Stygian Gambit, rob a Nine Hells themed casino built with stolen money. Level three is Reach for the Stars, search for the Celestial Codex in a mansion warped by the Far Realm. Level four, and this was actually made available for free on D&D Beyond, Prisoner 13, obtained the key to a vault from a spy master imprisoned in Revel's End. And then we have two different adventures at level five. We have Talkworth's Clockworks. That's a
what was that?
Talkworth's Clockworks. Liberate us near Neblin Town, besieged by clockwork automatons.
None of that title wanted anything to do with
And it's like let's make sure that Sergio never reads us more than once.
Like that your brain looks at that and goes, okay.
No, okay, let's
we'll trip through it. Right.
Okay. Yeah. And then there's Masterpiece Imbroglio, infiltrate a thieves guild to retrieve a stolen painting. There's Axe from the Grave, which is not the axe you're thinking of, but at level six, you can recover a stolen mandolin to lay a dead bard spirit to rest, which sounds awesome.
That does sound pretty awesome.
Level seven is Viterent's Vault. Retrieve a stolen diadem from the vault of a notorious thief. Mm-hmm. And then again, there are two adventures at level eight. Shard of the Accursed. Use a magical shard to mend a giant's broken heart and save a town from destruction. Now that sounds lovely. That sounds aw. And then Heart of Ashes, retrieve a king's heart to save his kingdom from a terrible fate. So
that also sounds pretty cool.
I mean, that, you know, they both have to do with hearts. They both have to do, you know, saving a town or a kingdom from some sort of destruction or terrible fate. But one sounds very like Dashboard Confessional, and one sounds very much like, you know, metal, more like Black Dahlia Murder.
Is where my brain went.
What's that?
So my brain went to Avenge Sevenfold.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, like it's like very like two sides of like the same coin, you know?
Yeah, like why are you two right next to each other?
Like they look the exact same, you know, like the swoopy haircut, the, you know, sleeved out tattoos, but one has an acoustic guitar and the other is very much plugged in. At level nine, Affair on the Concordant Express, obtain information from a stranger traveling aboard an interplanar train. Level 10, you have Party at Palazet Hall, snatch a diamond from an archmage in the Feywild. And then at level 11, you can play Fire and Darkness, wrest the Book of Vile Darkness from an Afridi and his lackeys.
Nice.
I mean, all of those sound like a bunch of fun.
Like they do.
And what's great is like, you know, they all sound like fun. There are, you know, two or three that really like tickle my fancy. And I'll talk about a couple of them, like I said, in the second half of the show. So like I said, it's very cool. You can kind of like, you know, like, oh, well, let's run this one. And then maybe someone else in your group is like, well, I kind of like that one. I want to run
I'd
this
rather
one.
Run this. Yes, I'm here for it. I love a solid heist. I really do.
So what else can we expect from Keys from the Golden Vault?
So as you mentioned earlier, you mentioned that sometimes these heists come along with complications. So that's one of those things I've got to bring up. Every heist has them. They're always going to happen. And then there's like these, you know, the serious heist icons coming your way. It's where you like, you know, cut to the red carpet, red tapestry pathway. OMG, it's unforeseen circumstances. Like crowd scream, all of it shows up. And it's whether, so directly quoting the books, whether they take the form of a rival crew appearing out of nowhere or a treasure that turns out to be fake, complications ratchet up the tension and require the characters to think on their feet. If you want to challenge your players, consider adding one of the complications below to any of this book's adventures. So it goes on to explain a couple options, a couple little things to kind of mix it up a little bit for you. So the first is the moving MacGuffin. And then second, you may find yourself coming up against a rival crew. Get that competition spirit going, you know.
I love that. I love that it was sort of a mechanic they introduced in Netherdeep, Covenant of the Netherdeep, like having this, you know, rival group, this like second group that's also trying to do what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to, at times, you know, at regular intervals in the adventure, have to deal with them in some capacity.
Right. Your paths are going to intersect over and over again. Absolutely. It's absolutely what that is discussed in here. So we'll start with our MacGuffin, mostly because it's a fun word.
Mostly. Mostly.
Mostly. And also it's pertinent to what we're discussing. MacGuffin is a plot device.
It's a twofer.
It's twofer. Its entire purpose is to move the story along or trigger an event or a situation. And examples of this are things that we have all seen or heard. A lot of trope type stuff. Gems that are required to, I don't know, summon the goddesses of time. A special ring that needs to be thrown into an active volcano. Those sorts of things are MacGuffins. But that's their entire purpose, is to move things along. Many of the heists in this book do contain one, which for me, as the DM personally, I see that as an opportunity. Like, these are great ways to get your players those items that you need them to have to move things along. Because let's face it, sometimes we don't end up where we thought we were going to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rarely do we end up where we thought we were going to when playing D&D, if I'm being completely honest. But this way, they have a lot of, you know, plug and play options there. But I digress. So a moving MacGuffin that they explain in this book would be one that used to be stored in one location, but ends up being moved. Example, when the opposing side or some rival crew or whatever is hunting for, let's say, a sacred scroll filled with stolen knowledge from the gods or something. They murder attending clerics, demanding its location. Those guarding the scroll knew it was going to happen. Scroll gets like secreted out of the building, you know, last minute, moved to a new place and stashed away there. And then some guy, some drunk at the bar in town, heard that there was one survivor and he might know something. After your players, of course, go to find the item is missing. So then they're sent somewhere else to look for it. Moving MacGuffin. So it does warn, though, in the book, not to keep in mind that using this device, and I absolutely agree with this, not to do it too many times or to do so willy-nilly without it making sense, because then you're just going to end up with frustrated players that are tired of chasing dead ends.
Right.
Unless y'all are there for a treasure hunt, in which case go for it. Like, you know, you do you. The other potential complication that they mention in the book that may come up is the rival crew, which, as Sergio mentioned, kind of a fun option. I think
very
it sounds
fun.
Great. It does. Yeah. So it's exactly what it sounds like. Just another group of folks chasing down the same thing as you for whatever reasons, maybe the same set of reasons, might be for a different employer. Who knows? That's all, again, at your discretion.
That was always a trope that I loved including in, like mostly in campaign when there's like a heist type adventure in a longer campaign. There's always it's like, you know, whatever this guy is paying you, like, I'll double it, and then it's up to the players to decide, you know, do we just continue on with the original plan? Do we take this offer and double cross our you know, first benefactor? Like, what do we do?
Exactly. So it's a lot of fun. I think it would be absolutely glorious to do it this way. So when you end up adding this other group, though, this you know, heisting foes, as it were. You can go ahead and start leaving like little bits of evidence and stuff there too, though, which I like that, throwing in more little clues for people to pick up on and things like that. Stuff like traps that have already been triggered or proof of recent disturbances in the environment that you're in and stuff like that. Even going as far as you mentioned, having your party run into them a couple times or their paths intersecting frequently throughout it. In discussing this part, though, Keys from the Golden Vault gives you several pre-generated characters, like character options, to use for this potential rival crew. Also gives you the table showing which stat blocks you should use for whichever level your party is, up to level 11, which I have a complaint about, but we know I want stuff with higher level.
We all do.
It just chaps me just the tiniest little bit. But that's my only complaint. So after that, we go on to learn about how to use the rival crew within the books. It gives you mechanics for how to do this. You decide or roll for whether they're behind your group or ahead of your heist crew. Gives you tips how to pay attention to how, also paying attention to how your players react to these rivals and whether they try to get there first or to just be done with the mission and thwart them behind them as well. So it just kind of opens up so many more creative role-playing options as well. And there's also a list or a table in there as well that lists several different types of motivations for all of the adventures, like all of the adventures included, like the rival crew. It gives you a pre-built reason why they're hunting the same thing as you. So it's all pretty cut and dry if you'd like to just grab it and go. Which I very greatly appreciate.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
My lack of time for planning.
No, lately. Exactly. I mean, there's definitely a time and place to be able to modify and adapt and tweak the game exactly to your liking.
Absolutely.
And there's sometimes like, look, I want to roll some dice. I don't have a whole lot of time. I just want to get down and dirty with it. Like, give me what you got.
But it does. It has everything situated so that you can readjust as much or as little as you want to.
And so before we get to the middle of the show and then subsequently talk about the adventures that Mary and I particularly love or like that we live and love. We do both
right?
of those
it's
things.
It's true. We do so, live them a little bit.
So Keys from the Golden Vault, like where does that name come from? Well, it's because the Golden Vault is introduced as an organization that hires characters to undertake these heist adventures. And so, like, you can any sort of patron or organization can be used to hire your player characters.
Absolutely.
To rob this this jewel or to save this Sniffnirblin town.
What? Bless you. It's Sniffnirblin.
Sniffnirblin town. But in the book, if you want to use the Golden Vault, they've created this whole organization. So
yes.
It's rumored to be associated with metallic dragons. Mm-hmm. It's a secretive organization that has its base on one of the good aligned outer planes. And so their motto reflects its primary motivation, which is do good no matter the costs, which I would guess puts it in the realm of chaotic good.
I believe so. Immediately following that sentence, missions from the Golden Vault are often illegal, but they always support a just moral cause. I sound like a brainwashing computer.
So it's one of those things like, look, like we're trying to right some sort of wrong, some sort
Absolutely.
Of injustice. And as you see, based on as you dig into the adventures as to why you're being hired, you know, why why this mission should be undertaken. It's usually because like somebody has been wronged in some sort of way and some sort of justice needs to be paid to the wrongdoers. It says that once an adventuring group proves itself effective and virtuous, an operative approaches the characters to offer them membership. And should they accept, its members join the ranks of the Golden Vault. And the person who invited them usually becomes their handler for future missions.
Mm-hmm.
And they include an NPC who's just like that. And we'll get to her in just a second.
Yeah.
So the keys from the Golden Vault.
These are neat.
Very cool. So
because I collect keys? I
collect,
well, yeah, a little bit. I collect music boxes.
Oh, okay. So yeah. So go ahead.
I thought it was neat. So when they become a Golden Vault operative, your players or player characters are going to receive an ornate key-operated music box from their handler. So every one of the adventures in this book explains to you how to use the Golden Vault in that adventure as well. So it explains them dispatching a golden key to the group, usually via some kind of hired courier. And this key is then inserted into the character's music box and turned. The box pops open, plays a message that assigns them a heist, tells them, you know, whatever it is they need to do, and sends them on their way. And after that, box closes, key vanishes. And it just makes me think of Charlie's Angels.
Right. Or Mission Impossible.
Yeah, you've got this, like, mission control kind of situation that's communicating with you from afar, sending you on these heists and whatnot.
Like I said, that the handler that you usually have is the person that invited you to the group, and then usually is your Charlie, essentially,
right?
And so the one that they've included in Keys from the Golden Vault goes mm-hmm. by the name Mira Rahir, and mm-hmm. essentially when she was young, she her mothers were kind, upstanding, you know, members of the city. They worked as city mm-hmm. clerks. As they were investigating some financial irregularities, the unscrupulous mayor framed them for embezzlement to cover his own corruption.
Of course he did.
And the only evidence that would clear them, that would clear her mother's innocence, was a stack of letters between the mayor and his conspirators. Because, of course, like, whenever you're doing something illegal, you want to put everything in writing.
They always do.
It's like a super villain, like, monologuing, you know?
It is, yeah. Like, go ahead and monologue, buddy. I know it's coming.
And so, but luckily for the Rahirs, a crew of Golden Vault operatives infiltrated the mayor's office, got the letters, revealed the crimes, and, you know, and were able to exonerate both women.
Right.
And so now, you know, Mira works as follows in her parents' footsteps, works as a city clerk, fights, you know, corruption, and is a member of the Golden Vault. And I love this. It says that Mira lives and breathes city protocols, procedures, and statutes. She also understands that sometimes doing the right thing means operating outside the law.
It's nice to see a character with morals like mine.
There you go. You see yourself in Mira. That's good.
I do.
Well, we're going to take a quick little break and go to the middle of the show. We're going to thank our patrons. We're going to discuss all the news that's going on in the world of Dungeons and Dragons. And we're going to get into some homebrew fun before we talk about a couple of the adventures that we love.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the middle of the show.
It's so middly.
It's nice and middly in here.
It is. It's not too beginning-y, not too ending-y.
That's
very middly.
You added at least three extra syllables there.
I'm from the South. We do that to a lot of words.
You are from California.
All right, I was infected by the South.
Yeah, there you go. You had a good old boy bite you. Now you're infected.
I'm infected. I got the Southerner.
There's terrifying. No cure. No known cure.
No known cure for this, I promise.
So let's go ahead and thank our patrons really quickly. Thank you so much to our patrons, including both Brian C's, Darkwing, Tex, Peter M, Josh H. Thank you all so much for supporting the show through patreon.com/dndlorecast. You know, if you are, yeah, if you're interested in helping the show in this way, you can do so by going to the website. You also get stickers and merch and bonus content, Patreon Plus installments, bonus episodes, all sorts of cool stuff. When we built the Patreon, we designed it with benefits and perks that we would have liked to see, like if we were fans of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Mary, what are some other ways that they can support the show?
Oh gosh, we are starting to just be everywhere, guys.
We're everywhere.
We are infiltrating all the social medias, and it's beautiful and glorious. We are D&D Lorecast everywhere. We are on Twitter. We are on the Instagrams. We are building the TikToks. You can find us in the Robots Radio Discord, the Robots Radio Network Discord. We have our own channel there. You can shoot us an email if you like, you know, at dndlorecast@gmail.com, or just like, if you're not the talking type, just go and leave us a review, rate us on whichever app you are listening to us on, because all of that helps. Every little bit of it helps.
It helps the algorithm of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And good old fashioned word of mouth too.
Oh yeah, that too.
But yeah, we
tell everybody.
Like you said, we're already on the Twitter. The Twitter and the Instagram are in full swing, and we are currently mm-hmm, building mm-hmm. not only the TikToks, but also the Twitches.
Yes.
And so we are very excited about what year 4 of the D&D Lorecast holds.
Mm-hmm. And they're working on acquiring things to make it even mo better.
Mo better. And speaking of mo better, what cool stuff has been announced in the past couple of days for D&D? Well, I was perusing the interwebs, and they announced that a new Minimates box set is coming out for pre-order. Now, you can go online and pre-order the Minimates Hero set. Mm-hmm, it's six mm-hmm. figures for about $50, and it includes all the heroes from the 1980s D&D cartoon. Now, for this Minimates set, it's the villains. So you'll be getting War Duke. You'll be getting Venger. You'll be getting a couple of Venger's steed, which I believe is called Nightmare. And then, of course, you also get the Dungeon Master, not because he's a villain, but because, you know, he wasn't included in the hero set and they wanted to include him.
Right, right. Of course. You gotta get him in there.
It includes Venger, War Duke, Deckian, the Skeleton Warrior, a Shadow Demon, and plus, like I said, Nightmare. And then the Dungeon Master figure
nice.
As well. And so you'll be able to pre-order that starting February 17th. That's slated for release in fall 2023. I mean, so yeah, if you are a D&D simp like I am, you're probably going to want to have these on your shelf like I will.
It's true.
I mean, I don't pick bones about it. I am what I am. I'm not going to apologize.
I am unapologetically simping for D&D. I'm here for it.
I am too.
I support this.
And in keeping with the Keys from the Golden Vault heist theme, mm-hmm. We wanted to give some of our own homebrew this week.
Just a couple little items.
To include some homebrew items of our creation that might help with any one of these heists that you might be planning in Keys from the Golden Vault or something original.
Ooh.
A homebrew item for a homebrew adventure. So Mary, you want to go first?
Homebrew. I do. Mine's not anything super complicated or complex or over the top. It's just a little tiny thing that might be helpful in any of those situations. So,
and that's what's fun about homebrew. They don't have to be game changers.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be something. This one's not. This is just a little bitty thing. It's just a small, you could use a ring, or you could keep him in a little vial or something of that sort on your hand. So what I have is a small little acid blob guy. Kind of think of an ooze, but tinier.
Okay.
That can be kept with your player, and he is able to be used to disable one trap or dissolve the inner workings of one lock one time per dungeon, and then he needs to rest until you get to your next place. Of course, if you want to change his frequency, go for it. But he's just a little bitty acid dude that helps you get through to the next location or the next little spot that you get to. So if your players get stuck, it's kind of a way to kind of, you know, get in motion, a little bit of a fast pass, if you will.
A fast pass. I always pay extra for those. I don't actually.
I
will stand in line.
I will wait in line.
As our forefathers intended.
I will wait in line like we were meant to, waiting forever. I, however, do not have a name for this cute little acidic bottle of ooze thing.
Oh, so if you're listening, you have a name, definitely shoot us a message either on the Robots Radio Network Discord, on email, on Twitter. What should we name this little ooze Mary has created?
I need you to picture him very kawaii, very ulu, with the big old eyes.
Of course. Of course.
I think I just watched the light fade a little bit in Sergio's
Of course. The homebrew item that I have created is, I do have a name for it because that's, I can't ever bring a homebrew item to the table without having a name for it.
I'm real bad at titling stuff.
And also, I have to have some sort of alliteration or some sort of like it's got to have something, you know, to it. This is the Creeping Chrysanthemum. And this is a flower. This is a chrysanthemum flower that you can wear somehow. You can pin it onto your armor. You could weave it into your, like braid it into your hair. Just have it on you at somehow.
Right.
Now, this Creeping Chrysanthemum will give you advantage on one stealth check per long rest.
Okay.
And once you use it, the petals wilt and fall off. But once you accomplish your long rest, the flower rejuvenates. The petals come back and you're able to use it again. Now, this is cool for the heist because you want to think like, oh, I essentially have advantage on a stealth check. I kind of get a mulligan. But at what point do you want to use it?
Right. So is this before? So I would assume you have to choose to use it before you know the results of the roll on your stealth check?
Yes.
Or, ooh, sneaky.
You say, you know, you say like, you have to sneak past these guards. You have to, you know, and call your intention, call your shot, essentially. Say, I want to use my Creeping Chrysanthemum and roll with advantage.
I like it. If you had gone with a carnation, then you could have used the aforementioned southerner voice and a what incarnation. But, you know, there's jokes to be made there.
Are there, Mary? Are there jokes?
There are always jokes sarcasms and puns. That's what my little ooze guy feeds off of, is puns and sarcasm.
I mean, well, that's got to be...
He's well said.
That's got to be incorporated into the name somehow. Let's go. So yeah, so there you go. We have your unnamed ooze. We're still looking for a name, and the Creeping Chrysanthemum. Use those. Let us know if you do. Let us know how they work out.
Oh yeah.
And with that, let's jump into the end of the show and talk about a couple of these adventures.
Yes, let's go.
Welcome back as we wrap up our first impressions on Keys from the Golden Vault. We're going to do so by talking about a couple of the adventures. Nothing, like I said at the beginning of the show, nothing spoilery. We're not going to ruin any of the adventures. But we do want to talk about a couple of them that, you know, at on surface level, like tickle our particular fancies.
Right. Yeah. They appeal to us.
One of them for me is the second level adventure, the Stygian Gambit. The brief description to start it off says, at the Afterlife Casino, a three-dragon anti-tournament called the Grand Monaro's Invitational awards one winner with a sizable purse and the Golden Orenes, a.k.a. the Furies, statuette.
Ooh.
A former gambler with a score to settle hires the characters to steal the statuette as well as gold from the casino's vault before the tournament ends and the winner is declared. The characters must case the casino, steal what they came for, and escape. So aside from, I mean, this is like Ocean's 11, which is a movie I love, you know, where you're robbing a casino. Aside from that, a lot of the reason why I really am drawn to this is like the mini game aspect of it. because you are in a casino. Oh. It gives you mechanics on how to play several of the casino games. Like there's Life and Death, which is a dice game played between the house, which is represented by a dealer, and a player. Mm-hmm. While up to five players can sit at a table, their only opponent is the house. So they're not okay. in competition with each other. It's just the players versus the house.
Right.
And so to play, each player places a bet. And once bets have been placed, the house and the players each roll a d20. If a player rolls lower than the dealer, the house wins. A player who rolls higher than the dealer reclaims the money they bet and then wins that same amount from the house. And then
I love that.
I mean, very simple. I mean, very, very simple mechanic, and something that can be incorporated into like other, you know, other adventures. Like, you know, this could be easily played like in a tavern, you know, at a back table.
I love it.
And much like the card game War, there is a like a tie option where you go to war. A player who ties with the house has two options, either surrender and lose half their bet, or they can go to war, in which case the player must double their bet, and then the player and dealer both roll again. Then there's a push your luck mechanic where if the player wins a roll of life and death, they can opt to push their luck on their next bet. In this case, they bet everything they won on the last roll. You know, which is what their bet was, plus what they won from the house. And if they win the second roll, the house doubles their bet.
I like it.
There are also copper slots. These machines, referred to by some casino patrons as tricky devils, are clockwork devices that accept copper coins. And it's really cool. You know, they explain like what they look like and how they work. But the mechanic that the players will be using is mm-hmm. between 1 and 9 copper coins is what they bet, you know, what they put in. And then they roll 5d6, which represents the five different like reels, you know, on the slot machine. And the goal is to roll as many of the same number on the dice as possible. And so if you roll 3 of a kind, your payout is 2 to 1. 4 of a kind, your payout is 4 to 1. And 5 of a kind, your payout is 10 to 1. Again, very like just simple, easy, and but fun mechanics. And my favorite though is the 3 Dragon Ante, which this is an actual game. This is an actual like game that you can buy. 3 Dragon Ante, you can buy it, you know, online, you know, retailer at your friendly local gaming store.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can play the card game for real as part of this adventure, which is, I thought, dope.
In that fact, is really cool.
They should include, there should be a bundle that includes the book and a pack of 3 Dragon Ante cards.
That would be really neat.
But you can, if you don't have the card deck, you can use D12s, and they include a rule set on how to play the game using D12s. So again, like I said, it's the idea of robbing a casino, the idea of doing an Ocean's 11 in D&D is dope enough as it is. But having these sorts of mini games attached to it is also a lot of fun.
I love it.
What's which adventure? I think I know which one it was, because as soon as I read the description, I think I took a screenshot of it and messaged you, and I'm like, this is you.
You definitely told me, well, I already know which one's your favorite before I had ever even like cracked the book open.
Yep.
Digitally cracked it open. Clicked the book open. There we go.
Clicked it open.
my favorite of them that I come across so far was absolutely Tockworth's Clockworks. I have the softest spot for Svirf Neblin. I do. Always will. I adore them. This is one of the ones that is for 5th level adventurers. And in the book it reads, the clockwork automatons that guard the Svirf Neblin town of Little Lockford have attacked the very residents they were meant to keep safe, forcing a town-wide evacuation. At the heart of the matter is security overseer Tixie Tockworth, a tinkerer who has turned malicious. In this adventure, the characters must enter Little Lockford, recover a security key, and use it to activate a fail-safe device that shuts off the automatons. So, while gnomes are going to get me there quicker, like that's going to be an instantly going to grab my attention, what did it for me is the aesthetic of this location too, and just kind of the whole vibe going on there. So it's a very steampunk-esque, but this town, Little Lockford, is, due to its strategic location, it is built into, how's this explained? The town is situated in a vast cavern tinged red with magma that flows through the channels that separate the various districts. By and large, the town is well maintained, with streets and buildings composed of gray stone bricks. Other noteworthy features, you know, are explained later in it. So it's got, you know, various bridges that connect these different sections of towns. Most of the buildings are a little like one story stone structures. But there's a few of them that are like moats. So there's these like floating islands in this underground volcanic lair with a tinkerer who has slowly turned herself mechanical. And it just gets a little crazy. And there's a little bit of a sci-fi aspect to it, too, that really did it for me. All the machines, because, you know, the person who makes them turns evil. Now the machines are attacking the town and you have to turn them all off and save everybody. And it's so tropey and I love it so much because of that.
Oh, yeah, like I said, I took the message. I messaged you and I was like, AKA the Merry Adventure.
The Merry Adventure.
Like, it's right in your wheelhouse. And that's what's cool. Like, I love the fact that you'll likely find something that you are absolutely 100% down for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you might even find a couple, but, you know, they all seem like a whole lot of fun.
They're all pretty solid. I do love the way that it has the, when you're using the Golden Vault as your patron, and the music box pops open and it says, and a soothing voice says the following. I love these little intros for every single one of these that starts with, you know, greetings, operatives. I just hear it in the very soothing, 007-esque, here's your next mission, Bond,
right, exactly.
Voice. Greetings, operatives.
Right.
And I love it so much. I've been waiting for heist stuff because I've had a hard time finding things that I could plug into the adventures that I already have running. So this is definitely scratching an itch.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. Like I said, for me, you know, being like, I've got one ongoing campaign that I'm a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't really have a whole lot of time for something else with that sort of like time commitment.
Right.
And so being able to get one of these adventures, you know, work through it really quickly and play it, you know, over one session, that's gangbusters for me. Like, you've got me, like, that's why I love Journeys Through the Radiant Citadel so much. I've already, yes, like I said, I already ran Written in Blood. I want to run more. And so
Candlekeep is the same way.
No, yeah, like all the anthologies.
That's what
I used to open.
That's what I used to open one of my campaigns, was one of the stories from the Candlekeep Mysteries. It's the Book of the Raven, actually.
It definitely will help a DM who might need a little bit of time to, you know.
Right. Hey, I don't quite have this next part ready, but hey, somebody, they want you to meet with somebody instead, and then you send them on one of these.
Exactly.
I love it.
And really quick, I had before we sign off, I had to mention Fire and Darkness, which is the highest level adventure that they have for 11th level characters. I had to mention it because it includes one of my favorite bits, like one of my favorite items in D&D lore. So for centuries, a powerful Afridi named Vrakir sent his armies against numerous foes and burned countless cities to ash. Now the tyrant has found an artifact of unimaginable evil, the Book of Vile Darkness. In this heist, the heroes must infiltrate Brimstone Hold, the prison fortress where Vrakir has locked away the Book of Vile Darkness, and escape with the Afridi's prize. So Afridi is a type of genie, the one that's native to the elemental plane of fire, and the Book of Vile Darkness. Of course, we did one of our Patreon Plus installments for the Vecna episodes. We discussed the Book of Vile Darkness. It's a fantastic bit of lore. I love it so much. It's one of my, like, there's a third edition and a fourth edition book of the same name. It's not an in-universe copy of it, but rather just, you know, a book that shares a similar title.
Right.
And the third edition version that I have is one of my most prized possessions. I love it so much. It's so dark and disgusting and vile. And if you know me, you know that's what I love. Yes, I love.
That's on brand. As soon as I saw a book of vile darkness, I was like, ah, yeah. Sergio, he's gonna love it.
I love Taylor Swift and I love the most brutal of metal. So,
and which one of us is the one with the Ravenloft mod in Stardew Valley again? Is that you?
That's still you.
Still me? Okay.
That's still you. Okay. But yeah, so like I said, anything, and I do believe, like, the Book of Vile Darkness is included in the 5th edition Dungeon Master's Guide as, like, one of the, like powerful artifacts in the magic item section.
Heck yeah.
But I don't think it's ever appeared, like, in an adventure otherwise. I think this is the first time it's shown up, like,
that's exciting.
In-game. You know, so it's very exciting for me personally. I am so excited for it. And so, yeah, I just had to to mention that the Book of Vile Darkness is here. It's ready to destroy. And also, like, the adventure itself, it seems like a less, like, you know, Ocean's 11, like, heisty. Mm-hmm. Like, it's still a heist. You still have to, like, sneak into this place, right, steal something, and burn off. But burn off, you know, haha, Afridi, Elemental Plane of Fire.
Yeah,
I can make puns, too.
Good job.
But
I'm
it also
so
seems,
proud.
It also seems like your more standard dungeon crawl, albeit with a more we are trying to sneak in and sneak out, so you got to be a little bit more careful rather than like, all right, what's behind this door? So it's kind of like it's like a stealthy dungeon crawl, which I like.
Ooh, I do like that too. I like that too.
Good old, who doesn't like a good old fashioned dungeon crawl? By gar, it's been a while.
Man, it has.
Well, thank you so much for listening. We hope that if you are picking up Keys from the Golden Vault, that you enjoy it. And if you do, if you're running some of the adventures, let us know. Let us know how they are. Let us know how you, if you're the DM, how you enjoyed them, or if you're a player,
yes,
how
absolutely.
You enjoyed them. We love to hear all the feedback, all the news, all like, if we want to hear about your campaign, we want to hear about your gaming session.
Yes, please.
Like, we will never be like, oh, this, you know, talking about what
someone
happened.
Someone wants to talk about D&D again.
Like, we will always, like, chomp at the bit for that stuff.
It's true. It's true.
Thank you so much for listening, for allowing the D&D Lorecast to be a part of your life for this short amount of time. We hope to we hope that you come back to the tower and
absolutely
enjoy us next week. My name is Sergio.
And I'm Mary.
Fare thee well, dear listener, and until we meet again, may all your 20s be natural.
Thanks for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider sharing it with a friend, following us on Twitter at DNDLorecast, or jumping on the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.